From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show number 680, Protecting Your Organization Using Azure Sentinel with guest Paul Keeley. Recorded Friday, February 21st, 2020. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts, LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Bringing back one of my favorites today, Paul Keeley, who's been a Microsoft MVP since 2010 in System Center Operations Manager and co-authored the book Mastering SCOM 2012. And today he's an Azure MVP and the co-founder of Born in the Cloud, a Microsoft managed gold partner in the cloud and enterprise management systems. And his latest book is Microsoft Cloud at the C-Level, designed to help people understand cloud security stack of Azure and Office 365 E5. He focuses on helping customers secure their administration workstations, Office 365 and Azure. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you so much.
And one of my go-tos for modern security thinking, because it's evolved so much.
It's crazy.
Yeah. We're in an interesting time. I feel like, maybe I'm nuts. I almost feel like we're starting to, as white hats, starting to win. Like the tools are working in our favor now.
So what's happening is the cost of breaches is becoming so painful.
Yes.
On so many fronts that people are like, people are just like, can I really afford this? Can I afford not to do it?
Yes.
Because like the Microsoft E5 stack is not cheap.
No.
By any stretch of the imagination. And Microsoft will always come in and see if they can do takeouts and put E5 in. And I suppose like it's worth just understanding why is the Microsoft stack, a big deal, and why is it worth considering in your org?
Right.
This is from somebody who has no gain in Microsoft and have no shares in the company. But, personally for me, the problem that we've had is like lots of companies have gone for inverted commas best of breed technology.
Right.
So they have one system on mobile device management, one on identity, one on FA. They've got something doing EDR on their devices, and they've ended up with 10 security tools and they're not talking to each other.
True enough. Yeah. You end up with this bunch of stuff and you're trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah. And like within modern security, we have a bunch of, we say assume breach. What does that mean? Well, we assume bad guys are going to get in because the biggest organizations in the world with, massive security budgets still get breached. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then the focus where we're all moving towards is behavioral analysis, not signature analysis.
Right.
Okay. And the example I give is you turn up to a bar and you're clean dressed and sober and you get in. Okay. And that's the equivalent of getting onto your PC, logging in, and you're in the domain.
But with your usual PC on the usual IP address, like all of those, it's normal kind of things.
Yeah. But for most organizations, once you're in, you're in. Mm-hmm. And you go to a bar and you start doing chasers and you get completely drunk, you're not going to stay in.
No.
Your behavior is going to be of such that someone's going to throw you out.
Yep.
And what E5 can do, what we can do with Intune, device health attestation, Microsoft Defender ATP, Cloud App, Azure Identity Protection, all these tools working together, is they can look and see things like, hey, you got in, you're doing just fine, you opened Outlook, then you open Gmail and you downloaded a file and the file had, a really light payload. It's after making a secure connection out and downloading a heavier payload, and the heavier payload's causing problems on your machine.
Right.
At this point, your behavior is not good. And so things that are going to happen is like identity protection is going to say, whoa, that doesn't look nice. Microsoft Defender ATP on the machine is going to say, I don't like the behavior of what's going on. And then it's going to start upping your risk score, and things like cloud app security are going to stop giving you access to Salesforce when you try to open a, you know, C-level or, you know, finance AIP file. It's right. going to be blocked, you know, so, you know, based on like, you know, we just don't trust you all the time. In fact, we trust you none of the time.
But this also is the model of ransomware, right? Is that one little mistake suddenly propagates into this massive disaster?
Massive, you know, absolutely massive. And ransomware has been so effective because, you know, of security practices that are less than ideal.
Sure.
And, you know, less than good. It's been easy to propagate.
Yeah.
And then I've been banging this drum like, oh, my God, E5's awesome. The intelligent security graph, you know, Microsoft's environment. Just one point on the intelligent security graph. Because Microsoft go on and talk about this, and lots of people couldn't actually tell you what it is.
Right.
I mean, it's hyperscale threat intelligence library. You know, it's a threat intelligence library that's taking in, you know, I think it's 7 petabytes of data a day, you know, more than 1 trillion signals every day, and it's correlating them in real time and seeing, hey, Richard has just come on from this IP address. We've never seen him on that IP address before. That IP address is doing funky stuff. We don't like the look of this. And the ISG is updating these signals and saying, hey, that doesn't look good.
Right.
You know, but like lots of people's threat intelligence is like Excel spreadsheets and, you know, JSON and CSVs that you download. Well, if I'm a hacker, I could very easily start off with a Terraform template in Amazon and, you know, deploy machines and start launching an attack on you. I can pretty quickly change IP addresses, and then I can pretty quickly move my attack to different clouds completely. You know, move over to Azure,
sure.
start attacking from Azure, and, you know,
based on the credentials I've managed to grab.
Yeah, by the time old threat intelligence has worked it out, I mean, it's already gone.
Yeah, it's already moved on. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I did a show with Jeff Snover talking about the Office 365 intelligent substrate, which is sort of the new role he's in. And I think you're describing one of the things they get to do with the intelligent substrate, which is look at that overall, what is your normal behavior in Office 365 versus this abnormal behavior so that you can... it can identify it, you know, in near real time.
Sure, sure. And that's the point, in near real time.
Yeah.
You know, super close to near real time. So people say, okay, looking at E5, it's nice, but it's massive and it's complex and there's loads of portals, you know, 10 or 12 portals. And so Microsoft have heard this message and, you know, the whole SIEM market, you know, so SIEM is a security event and identification tool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically we point our logs at a SIEM tool, you know, things like QRadar and Splunk, Rapid7, and now Azure Sentinel. And so Microsoft built a cloud-based SIEM. It has out-of-the-box connectors, you know, deep connector knowledge into the Office 365, Azure AD, E5 stack. And then, you know, connectors to E5, Cisco, all the other stuff that you'd expect. So first of all, the out-of-box connectors do your SaaS.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have connectors for F5, you know, Cisco, Checkpoint, you know, that kind of stuff. And then we've syslog, so we can just pull in syslogs. And then we have custom HTTP ingestion. So like one of the things that our company Born in the Cloud do is we write connectors just with Azure Functions to pull data in, you know, and we have pulled them in from Cisco, Meraki, and Salesforce, and, you know, all those kind of components where you want to pull logs into.
Right.
So we get all the logs in, we store them in log analytics, and then we write these rules that look at that data. And they get in and they help you understand, you know, what is wrong and what the problem is. And with Azure Sentinel, with every SIEM, we are looking for something called high fidelity alerts. So people talk about alert fatigue in the security operations center in your SOC. And there's a big challenge of how do we reduce alert fatigue?
Right.
And well, what Microsoft starts with have done is
putting out fewer alerts, right?
Yeah. But so the challenge is that everyone talks about how do we find the signal from the noise, mm-hmm. right? And so, like E5 could produce a whole number of alerts on a whole number of platforms. And Microsoft have written a machine learning algorithm called Fusion that goes through, you know, tons of low level, you know, information warning alerts mm-hmm. and joins the dots on them. And when they join the dots in enough places, they go, oh, that's actually a problem. You know, that's critical. And the importance to this, like why this is important to listeners is if I go into your house and I light a, you know, paper bag beside the smoke alarm, boom, the smoke alarm goes off. You know, that's tripping a security alert.
Yep.
That's like pretty old school. Mm-hmm. If I spent a lot of time breaking into your org, I wouldn't want to trip the smoke alarm.
Yeah.
You know, I just wouldn't. I'd open the window and have a smoke outside the window. I have to be subtle and gentle. Mm-hmm. And so finding people often requires more behavior analysis than just plain old, hey, someone tried to launch Mimikatz or, you know, PowerShell Empire, you know, some kind of old tool.
Yeah.
So we just assume those bases are covered. Some places they aren't, but we just assume those bases are covered. So we look for more sophisticated things. So what's a more sophisticated thing? Well, if I were to ask you, if I compromise your mailbox,
right?
Your Office 365. One of the first things I have to do is do reconnaissance. I don't know anything about it. You have to start doing searches. And if I asked you, how many times do you do an Outlook search on a Monday at 2 o'clock in the day, you'd have no idea.
No.
Or SharePoint or, you know, whatever. But that type of behavioral analysis, that type of long-term looking at lots of signals and finding anomalies, that's what we can do with Azure's machine learning, which plugs into Sentinel. And so collecting logs, having alerts, seeing what's going on, that's nothing new.
Right.
You know, that's, everyone does that.
Well, and so again, people tripping over the fire alarm, you've got mechanisms for that. That's not this.
Yeah. I mean, so really what the power of Sentinel for us is, you know, there's two key differentiators for Azure Sentinel compared to other products. And the first differentiator is logic apps. Hmm. So with the Microsoft infrastructure of Azure, we can write logic apps to respond to things like a password spray, hey, block the IP address, a user gets breached, block the user account, global admin switches off MFA, hey, switch it back on again.
Right.
And then we can make our logic apps more intelligent so that, you know, we write logic apps that do things like for impossible travel. So the most likely cause of impossible travel is something like I go to Vegas, I go to Inspire Microsoft conference, mm-hmm. and, you know, 5 minutes ago, my iPhone said I was in Nevada. I connect to the Wi-Fi at the event. I'm now in Seattle.
Right.
Okay. Microsoft says, hey, impossible travel. And so what we want is we want a high fidelity alert. So in Sentinel, we have a logic app that will go and see this impossible travel. It will find your details in Azure AD and it will ping a power app on your phone. It says, hey, Paul, did you just join a conference Wi-Fi? We just after seeing this. And I can respond back on the power app. Yes, that was me. Life is good.
Right.
Okay. So, you know, we've got this interaction.
And maybe you add an extra authentication step there, like, okay, well, give me your UB key or, you know, give me some other token. Make sure it's really you.
Sure. And so this automated responses, this is like one of the main differentiators mm-hmm. in Sentinel, is that we can take action on the spot.
I also find that my average user is pleased when I ask for additional security at a time when they're doing something unusual.
Well, I talk to organizations all the time who say, what's your strategy for enabling MFA? And I say, I right click and enable NFA, and they say, no, seriously. And I say, okay, how happy would you be if you won $1 million tomorrow, or you sold your house and you had $1 million, and you go up and you open a bank account, and they say, you know, hey, here's your internet banking. And I say, how do I get on? And they say, I just use an M password. That's it. Yeah. I mean, would you leave your money there? And the answer is no. But you expect to have your company account left like that. You know, I mean, it makes no sense.
No, I mean, I think intelligent security friction is generally appreciated. You know, I accept the fact that when I'm not home and I do a particular activity, I get a couple of extra authentication steps. It's like, ah, good. You've noticed I'm doing something unusual.
Yeah. You know, and like we just, I don't really know how you can expect no security changes.
No, but you know, I think people, like, you know, you said this off the top, the gestalt is being lifted now. The breaches are so common now. Everybody feels threatened. Giving a sense that we're working on the security problem, I think it's a confidence builder. It's a requirement for a conscientious company to do this.
For sure. Oh, no, 100% for sure. And like, we just have to, you know, like it's, you know, we just have to do it. So the automation platform, Microsoft released things like Private Link, which is a connection from Azure to your data center so that tools like Logic Apps, which normally run across the internet, don't have to go across the internet. They can really, you know, just go privately to your data center, your environment.
Interesting.
So Private Link has been a game changer. Azure Arc has been a game changer because it allows us to risk score and understand the compliance of environments, you know, in Google, in AWS, on-prem. You know, that's been a big deal. And then the second game changer for Sentinel is machine learning.
Right.
All right.
Paul, before we dive into that, let's take a brief moment for this very important message. If keeping up with the growing amount of security patches and managing complex Microsoft in-place upgrades are becoming a pain point within your IT department, Barramundi Management Suite is the solution. The Barramundi Management Suite gives you real-time lifecycle management of all network endpoints, from classic Windows and Mac to iOS and Android devices. Barramundi software automates time-consuming tasks, including Windows migration, software installation, inventory, and backup. Whether you manage IT for a small company or a global corporation, Barramundi optimizes endpoint management, frees time for new projects, and reduces IT costs. Check out www.barramundisoftware.com to receive your Run As Radio 25% discount and info for a 30-day trial. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's my friend Paul Keeley. And we've been talking about Azure Sentinel as sort of this hub of all of these different security sources, right? You were just about to dive into the machine learning part. And I think this is where my reference to Jeff Snover's show a couple of weeks ago on the intelligent substrate, where it's like, now that we have, this is the cloud working for us, right? That you have this ability to see across all of these things and to see suspicious interactions, but it's machine learning that's figuring it out.
Yeah. So let's set the stage with machine learning. Okay. So some time ago, my wife brought home kitchen towels, and it said with aloe vera on them.
Okay. You know? As you do. So
it's a paper towel, you know. I mean, maybe there was an imprint of aloe vera, but you know, it's marketing gone crazy. And so everything I see today is with ML. You know, right. with ML.
Yeah, save
it's
me.
Just, and it's just nonsense. It's just absolute nonsense. So the thing you must understand is that ML is made up of two words, machine learning. The machine has to learn what's wrong, okay? And so if you want to detect a cancer tumor, you show an algorithm 1,000 cancer, you know, cells. You say, hey, look, these are all cancer.
Right.
And then it knows what to look like. Well, if I go into your org and you can show me 1,000 successful breaches, you don't have an org anymore. You know, you're dead.
True enough. Okay? Yeah. You've been destroyed by that point.
Yeah. So with machine learning, the important stuff is that it's unstructured machine learning. Mm-hmm. What that means is that we have to have algorithms that can run and look at data and on small data samples make decisions that we analyze. Now, you can write your, you know, or people can write notebooks for you, Jupyter notebooks that we can run in the environment.
Yep.
And this is the key takeaway from this call, is that with machine learning, there's two things that are important. Number one is the answer, and number two is how did you get there?
Right.
So if I tell you something's wrong, you have to be able to show me why.
Right.
And so when we run Jupyter notebooks and we do, for example, risk scoring, we outprint the risk score where we say, hey, a user has a risk score of 0.7. Why? And we say, this is what they've done on, you know, all of the Office suite. This is what they've done on their domain controllers. This is what we see on their phone. You know, we go to a whole bunch of data sets. We look at what they're doing and we risk score the user. Then we risk score their device. Then we risk score the IP. And suddenly we get a much richer, deeper understanding of what's happening with, you know, with that user. And why do we do that? Because alerts come into Sentinel in a chronological order.
Right.
So they, you know, but order of chronological, that means nothing to a SOC. What a SOC needs to know is, if I risk score the entities in 20 alerts and one entity has a high risk score, that's what I need to look at.
Sure. Yeah, right. This is all in that same thing, getting rid of alert fatigue, like filter down to the thing where it's like, you should pay attention to this.
Big time, big time. And so we've been working pretty closely with the Sentinel product group, you know, in terms of, you know, we've been out working with customers, we've been deploying this, you know, in a lot of environments, and we've seen the challenges where people say, hey, I need to do this. Hey, I need to do that. You know, simple stuff that, you know, you need to go and do a little bit of work to get around. And so, you know, the thing for us is that we decided to build a managed SOC to take the power of Sentinel. And basically Microsoft have built Sentinel for it to be managed. And what I mean by that is Sentinel, so they have Azure Lighthouse. So Azure Lighthouse is the ability for you to pick a resource,
right,
and give another Azure tenant read access, or, you know, whatever access you want, but read access to that resource, right? And so the model for Sentinel is a company like ours, like Born in the Cloud or another MSSP, you know, there's loads of Microsoft partners doing it. Mm-hmm. They will set up Sentinel in their environment. They will help you set up Sentinel in yours, and Azure Lighthouse will connect the two.
Okay.
Now, what this means for the customer is that they still have sovereignty on the data. The data is in their tenant, in their log analytics workspace.
Right.
They can see what's happening. And at any point, they can remove the Lighthouse connection from the MSSP, meaning that if the MSSP gives a poor service, customer doesn't have to stay with them.
Right. And they're not crippled, right?
They're not crippled. And you see, the thing is, changing your SIEM, which is what Sentinel is, changing your SIEM is like going into a house and saying, let's retrofit underfloor heating.
Yeah. Yeah. Good luck.
It's not a nice thing to do.
No.
And so you can deploy Sentinel once and have it working and have an MSSP come in and help you, you know, manage the SOC part of it. Mm-hmm. And if you say, hey, you know, that partner, they ain't doing so good, they're not working the way I was expecting them to, you know, you can un-Lighthouse, you know, just use JSON to remove it from one,
right,
and push it to another. And in, you know, 40 minutes, all your events would be going to a new MSSP.
Do you see Sentinel really needing a partner to help most customers with it? Or is it something that the average, you know, IT person can get started with? Is it that specialized?
Well, okay, so that's very interesting. So deploying Sentinel, which is just your SIEM.
Right.
So we think of it as the SIEM, which is Sentinel.
Yeah.
The SOC, which is the people that actually look at it.
Yeah.
And the store, you know, security orchestrated, you know, automated responses. Response. That's the automation engine.
Right.
Our security offering is called SX3, you know, because it's SIEM, SOC, SOAR. I know, right, it's pretty obvious, but that's what we called it. And so your average IT person can go and install Sentinel, can go and connect all the connectors, can enable the rules from Microsoft, and they will have Sentinel up and going.
Right.
Okay. You don't need a partner for that. It's a feature blade. Next, next, next. Okay. If you want to take in data sources that aren't there, you want to connect to Salesforce, for example.
Right.
You're going to need a connector to get to Salesforce. And what I mean by connecting to Salesforce, I mean getting the sign-in logs for Salesforce.
Right.
Or the sign-in logs for ATP or, you know, some SaaS service that you're using. And so, you know, somebody can help you get in. And normally most people need a little bit of help, you know, on postman calls to the API and putting that into something like an Azure function.
And this is a lot of one-time work. I mean, once that connector is up and running in the way you want it, you're not going to need to work on it again.
Big time.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So then getting Sentinel up and going and having it to, you know, that's like, you know, might be like a couple of months work. And then once it's there, it should be running. So then just because you have a seam in place, it's like walking past a car alarm, you know, that's going off outside the house with the house alarm going off. And everyone says, hey, look at that car alarm's going off and look at that house alarm's going off. And so on my radio stations, all I hear is, hey, you know, monitored alarms. What's the point in having it if it's not monitored?
Right.
And that's essentially what your SOC do. So, you know, most people today do not have seams, and people who are putting in seams understand that, you know, there's 24 hours in the day. There's kind of three shifts, you know, 7 days a week to start looking at this. If you're going to incur the cost of building a seam and putting the data into it, you kind of need somebody to be actually looking at it.
Right.
So that's just what a SOC does. And if you're one last point on the automation on the logic apps, and this is another super important one, is when you call a logic app in Sentinel, you don't enter any details. You just hit run. And the permission to run the logic app is inside the service principal or the managed service identity in Azure AD. So what that means is, I can go and call a logic app for a customer to block a user's Azure Active Directory account without having permissions to their Azure Active Directory. You know, we call the logic app on a webhook. It performs the action and it does the job. Because the last thing you want is a requirement that either your internal security team or your managed security team need to be domain admins and exchange admins.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, that there's no point in that.
No,
you know,
it's more of this problem with, you know, just enough administration, right? I don't want to give them more privileges that just increase risk ultimately. But there's got to be moments where they have the right to poke into a service that is capable of doing that because they've found a response time. But do we really want humans in that loop? Isn't this what SOAR is about, that automated response that, hey, this account is misbehaving, lock it?
Yeah. So I absolutely agree that what we don't need human intervention with that. And we're working for a big mortgage company in the US. Mm-hmm. And we said, hey, look, you know, we see, you know, particular users sending 100 emails in an hour. That's impossible. The high water mark's about 50.
Yeah.
And they said, yeah. So what will we do? And we said, well, look, we can remove the exchange license. And in a few minutes, it stops their ability to send and receive. They're like, awesome. And I said, now we'll automate this. And they said, not a chance. You will write the logic app and you give us a way to call it. We said, fine. So we did that. And, you know, we see the thing trip. An email gets sent to the exchange admin. Very first thing they do is go and remove the exchange license. And so we said, well, okay. So, you know, what was the first thing you did? You did what the automation would do.
Right.
Why don't we let the automation do it?
And then send you the notification saying done. Because now you're taking out the latency of the person reading the email and deciding on an activity.
Well, and, you know, the problem that we have with email is, you know, when I go to a company and I work with like IT operations, mm-hmm. everybody has a folder and you can see, 175,964 unread emails.
Yeah.
And it's popping up and what's that? Oh, that's our storage controllers. And what's that? Oh,
Yeah, it's
and
noise.
Everyone just ignores this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah,
so, you're
exactly
going to have
right.
more emails that are just ignored.
Yeah.
But it makes no sense.
I got to think that every time you build a logic app to disable capability, you have to put some mechanism someplace for how do you re-enable that? So after this, after we deal with what was going on here, clean the person machine up or figure out that it was a human doing something unusual and didn't realize, you got to be able to unwind it.
So our story for that is with the same mortgage company, we said, hey, no one can send 100 emails. Let's set the high watermark at 50, see if it trips, do it manually for a bit, do some investigation. And they found the high watermark was, in fact, 50 emails and people couldn't send 50 emails a day. So we set it up and life was good.
There's 50 emails a day or 50 emails an hour?
Sorry, 50 emails in an hour.
Okay, because I can do 50 emails in a day.
Yeah, I know. So then what happened is a director was flying from Seattle to New York. He gets in on the plane and he responds to a ton of email on a 5.5 hour flight.
Sure.
Lands, opens his laptop, connects, and sends 125 emails.
There you go. Click.
And, the automation said, oh, look at you, disables him. Then he starts screaming at the help desk, what did you morons do? And they didn't have the button to re-enable.
Yeah.
So you are 100% correct that any action that you take to block, you also have to give, an easy action to remove.
And by that, now I'm thinking about this. Was it wrong to turn that person off?
Oh, yeah.
Because it is an unusual behavior. Is it better to just allow that turn off to happen, kick off the occasional tech support ticket, which has a clean unwind process to get them back enabled again?
So I agree with you.
Yeah.
And the conversation that has to be had from the business is that, like IT has to say to the business, hey, look, we have to err on the side of caution.
Sure.
If that happens once a month and we fix it in 40 minutes, is that the end of the world?
Yeah. That's a great question. What is the metrics around that? You are going to get the occasional false positive. The vast majority of more than 50 emails in an hour is a runaway, bad guy, a bad process of some kind. So for the few, false positives that are remediable, is it worth it? It's a great question. And I guess it's going to be a case-by-case thing. Like, you just have to have that conversation. The problem, of course, is the seniority of the person that was on that flight, right? And that's the issue.
I know. So we were onboarding a hospital and we see a PC that has Windows Defender ATP or Microsoft Defender. No, you can't call it Windows Defender. Microsoft Defender ATP picks up that this machine is running an app that has, startup.exe /user as the local administrator /password with the password clear. Okay.
Save me.
So we say, hey, we want to do an app restriction on that machine and go fix it. And they said that machine monitors respiratory systems in ICU.
Right.
So you isolate that and we're in trouble.
Yeah, we're going to kill people.
So that's where there's a growing up together process between the SIEM and the people who are managing and looking at it, like the SOC, whether it's internal or external. There's still this process of needing to know and understand, can I take action?
Totally fair. Now, I want to jump back to one thing, which I think you said kind of casually, to be honest, Paul, which was, the 24-hour staffing of a SOC. Like, that's beyond the reach of a lot of organizations. So, I want to feel like this automation option means I only need to do two shifts. And if you're knocked out in that 8-hour window, you'll be back up and running in the morning. Like, you should go to bed anyway.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And what some orgs look to do is they look to outsource certain components
sure.
of their environment. Okay. And like we're working for an org, a very large org, and they've said, hey, who is important in this org? You know, this is an animal farm. You know, some people are important and some people, they're all equal, but some are more equal.
Yes.
So who's more equal? And they identified 100 people who were
more
the most
equal.
Valuable people in the company.
Right.
They held IP. They had access to finance. You know, they had access, you know.
And
to,
so from a security perspective, represent yeah. substantial risk.
Yeah, they absolutely did.
Mm-hmm.
And so we onboarded or looked at taking a subset of them into a separate Sentinel.
Right.
And we just go and monitor those people. And they just pay for 24/7 for that group.
Right. And so spend less noise, more focus group, but represent the most significant risk. If something happens to their machines, their accounts, you know, you think about what the modern ransomware and phishing exercises are. They're spoofing CEOs and CFOs. So the fact that
yeah.
you would put specific scrutiny on senior accounts makes a lot of sense.
And the analogy that I give to people is, I fly a lot. When I fly, I get into a hotel, and in the safe of the hotel, you know, I put maybe four items. I put my laptop, my phone, my keys, and my wallet,
right.
and then I go down to the gym. You know, I'm not trying to stuff in yesterday's socks and t-shirt.
Yeah.
You know, because it's just not valuable.
Yeah.
You know?
It is gauging the valuables and gauging the constraint of resources that we have.
And that's, that to be honest, is still a difficult nut to crack.
Sure. Well, now you have to have that conversation with management about acceptable levels of risk.
Yeah, and people have to understand, you know, that, you know, maybe some people just aren't that important.
Well, that the risk is lower. Like, they should feel lucky, right? You're not
yeah.
that risky. You don't have, because there's a price to that higher risk. You are going to require them to use UB keys and or authenticators and, like, lock their accounts down harder. And they are more likely to get shut off for unusual behavior. Than other accounts are. Like, it isn't free to be scrutinized. Don't feel left out. It's like, this is not all fun and games.
Yeah. And so the Microsoft team who are like the security teams right now, I mean, there's a lot of teams in security.
Mm-hmm.
They are really on a vision and really on a mission to do some pretty incredible stuff. And so I guess one call out I would have to listeners who, when I say Microsoft security, they say you got to be kidding, is if your experience of Microsoft was 8 years ago and, you know, MS proxy server and, you know, all that kind of malarkey, come back now and have an open-minded look at
yeah.
what they do. They are leaders in five of the Gartner Magic Quadrants.
Right.
And I used to think that was nonsense until I realized how grumpy Gartner are with Microsoft in general.
Yes.
That is the truth. You know, that is the truth.
Yes.
And so I actually valued the Gartner stuff a bit more than I used to, because they're pretty, you know, they don't give out those recommendations too easy.
I appreciate the sentiment, but let's face it, like, if you're still bought into the Microsoft as the insecure solution, like, you still think it's 2000. Like,
yeah,
it's 20 years. Things have changed, right? You know, that letter, that the trustworthy computing letter that Bill Gates put out all those years ago, it changed the organization, and it took years and years to get great. But for the most part these days, most people refer to Microsoft security as the optimal approaches, not the inferior approaches.
I think it's slowly, you know, moving to that stage. But I try and explain to people that Microsoft have bet their business on cloud.
Yeah, that is the business now.
That is what Microsoft is now. It's a cloud company. Okay. And for, you know, everything is about cloud. Everything's about Azure. It's how do we, you know, get more, do more, help people with Azure. And the biggest blocker to cloud from any vendor, you know, 9 years ago was security. People are like, you know, how are you going to prove that it's secure? And so Microsoft had no choice but to embrace, wrap their arms around security.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, one of the things that I heard a while ago, I think Symantec's annual revenue is $1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And Microsoft spend $1 billion on security and their products every year.
Well, and the bottom line is, if what will take down the public cloud is a major failure of security.
Yeah.
That, you know, that that goes across domains. That doesn't represent an individual's failure. You know, you can misconfigure your cloud instance and get breached. But if we ever have a breach where someone figures out a weakness in the infrastructure of the public cloud, that will be a tough day for the AWSs and Azures of the world.
Well,
and they're, you know, you think about when guys, what keeps guys like Scott Guthrie awake at night, it's that kind of thing.
And like what leaves me aghast is when Teams goes down because a certificate runs out of that day.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you've got one of the most advanced computer platforms in the world and somebody can't work out that a certificate's gone out of date.
Yeah.
And it's going to, you know, cause Teams problems for millions of people.
Yeah. At the same time, that's not actually a security breach. That's just.
Oh, I know. Dumbness. I know. It's just, you know, like, you know, what I'm saying is that, like, it's so advanced in some ways.
Yeah.
And then in other ways, something as simple as, you know, a certificate going out of date on Teams.
There's automation for that, guys. You can take care of that. It doesn't ever need to be down. Hey, Paul.
And it's not like we all don't make mistakes.
Oh,
simple
sure.
mistakes.
Yeah.
But we're all not hosting Teams for 20 million people every day.
We expect the best of the best to be working inside of those organizations. And so when dumb stuff like that happens, like what happens to us regular mortals, you have to look at them and go, come on.
And so when the Microsoft 2020 Security Awards are in, I don't know when this is going to go out, but they're in San Francisco the Sunday before the RSA conference, and our company has been nominated in the managed SOC category, which I don't envisage us winning, but I'm really looking forward to spending time with the security leaders from lots of great companies around the world at RSA.
Well, it's got to be an honor to be nominated and to be in that list. Like that's a list, you know, you're in a list with Accenture for crying out loud.
I know, and Avanade, and you know, these massive companies that I've looked up to my whole life.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
yeah, absolutely. I do look at it and I think, you know, it's super cool. For me, it's a bit of a David and Goliath, you know, when you're competing against Avanade, you know, unless you're Accenture.
Hey, Paul, it's always fun to talk to you, man. Thank you so much for digging in on this. That's good stuff. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.